from the outside. Other people's lives can look perfect, but have something to hide. Don't miss your true life's calling to be a detective. In this real-life investigation on assassins, imposters, families who kill their own, and survivors. Where we'll also discuss how violent crime causes a ripple effect of trauma and help the victims and their families find new ways to cope with stress left behind. This episode includes descriptions of emotional abuse, child sexual abuse, sexual and physical violence, sibling abuse, and murder. Larry's the son of a famous forensic psychiatrist who led a double life, notable for his roles on the John Gotti and O.J. Simpson defense teams, doctor to a royal princess. Welcome to this episode. Now let's get into it. Here's Larry.
Okay, we're back. So in my book, they're asking me about the elbow. They're quoting me. There, Paul asked me to look at his elbow. So I asked why. He asked me to tell him what his elbow reminds me of. So I made a quick guess. Did you strangle someone with it? How was I supposed to know? The only other time someone asked me about an elbow is when I began talking in therapy about my grandfather molesting me. The psychologist touched my elbow and then asked me what that reminded me of. But Paul was trying to tell me something. What was he trying to tell me by asking me to look at his elbow and guess what it means? Hell if I know. But there's more to it that developed. So my friend says, I'm curious about what this sign meant at that moment with Paul. If I answer questions, what do I think somebody thought? First of all, I know it's impossible to know what somebody else thinks, and that's why I try to make everything so damn clear. It's about what this sign meant at that moment with Paul. Okay. Well, Paul is my father's best friend. Okay. Gosh, I remember my mother told me they met in a court case. And when Paul started coming to the house, I was in high school already. So this is like, what, 30 years ago? And so Paul used to be a Boston police officer. Guy stands like 6'4". I'm guessing around 400 pounds. His weight was a problem. One of the reasons why he might have taken a disability leave from the police force and did his private detective business, which became very successful. So what I mean is that if Paul is my father's best friend, sure, yeah, my father probably confided in him. I'm there in the counseling session to talk about maybe issues I have, other issues. And so the guy says, relax. So I relax. And he says, hey, can I grab your elbow? I am going to grab your elbow, and you're going to tell me what it reminds you of. And so, okay, I relax. And then he comes up to me, and he grabs my elbow, and I start telling him exactly what happened to me for years as a kid. And I don't want to go over the whole thing. I want to answer your question. But Paul must have either given me a sign for that, because my father was upset, because the whole thing was that his father was the one who molested me. My father was in denial about it. In the 1979 report that I posted, it's funny because the cover letter really says more, and which is that I was a passive aggressive, precocious, very bright. There was an incestuous relationship with my mother. But it's funny because in the report itself, it looks like my father tried to make an excuse for misbehavior, this and that, on what he thought was some sort of big problem with me and not with the home. He was always trying to avoid the home, and he couldn't face the fact that his father was like that. And even in 1991, my grandfather asked me to hold his dick while he was peeing. It didn't need me, of course. It was not like quadriplegic or anything. He wanted me to hold his dick. And my father came in the room. And so it's like something that my father obviously didn't want anyone to know or to deal with. So number two is he might have been setting me up for what happened later. What happened later was when in Cebu later, when these guys I wrote about, one of them, strangely enough, just a coincidence perhaps, but considering what that guy did by going in my room and stealing a piece of paper that was a fax from Boston that I copied and talking to me and with those other guys he was with, who were very specific. I mean, they weren't obviously total strangers out of nowhere. They came. So the guy says to me to look at his elbow, but it was a little different. He's like, hey, you know, I got hit by a motorcycle or something. But, you know, I had just come from China, actually, and I got hit by a motorcycle. You know, it's funny because this morning, I don't want to go on a quick tangent, but I was thinking about, well, doesn't make sense, does it, that Paul, being his best friend and an investigator, hasn't investigated this. I mean, there's so many things. If you look at the proof is in the pudding scenario, that, you know, you just gotta, I'm just saying exactly what happened. And I already recorded the answer. Like I say, I don't prepare, it's all from memory. So I finish my recording, I go to click something, and then it strikes me. It was a very good question about the elbow, and I'll tell you why. I didn't realize this till I went into the kitchen. It's like, it was kind of short. I made the appointment to go to my father's office because of the attack in Seattle. They rejected my passport. I went to Boston. My father had already lied, had already used my mother to record us in her car on her dashboard phone. And that's when I took the common facts. So I says to my father, to make the appointment, I said, let's meet with Paul. We made the meeting at his office with Paul. Paul was there. Paul had investigated me for my mom at one point, my father both, right after high school, maybe in high school too, and they tried to pretend it never happened, and they, like I says, Paul and I had an understanding. Paul was investigating me and was very upfront about it, but my mom would say it never happened, and it made me look paranoid, but I wasn't paranoid. And my aunt, her name's Ruth Pearl. Anyways, Aunt Ruth went to my mom on my behalf and got my mom to admit it. So I'm wondering, well, is there a connection between the Seattle attack and those people with Paul's crew, Paul Rancourt's, that investigated people? So I'm in my father's office and I tell my father what happened. And the only question my father even asked, the only question, says to me, who did you hire? Now, as a response, I hired an armed bodyguard who actually knew somebody in the Brooklyn Seafoods restaurant who confirmed it happened. We just don't know who dropped the bottle off the roof from the Brooklyn Seafoods restaurant right after I left the passport agency there and got a quick bite to eat. So the reason why the elbow is important is because Paul said that to me as his reply to my question about what happened in Seattle. Does my father know anything about this? My father quickly says, hey, well, who'd you hire? When I mentioned that I hired a party guard and then Paul. And then I turn from my father to Paul, and Paul says, hey, look at my elbow. What do you think it means? And that's why it was strange. That's why I wrote about it. And that's, you know, and what I had described before, the implication of what it could mean. Well, was he trying to tell me something to look out for later? The guy asked me in the seat to look at his elbow, or is it a try to help me understand why my father was going nuts, just in general, any type of interactions with me, what it reminded him of, dealing with just talking to me, you know, maybe he had his issues with himself about my having uncovered what happened with his father, who knows. But the fact is that Paul said that at the moment where we're discussing what happened in Seattle and my father was lying. And my father also brought up, other than asking me who I had hired, which I didn't tell him, he talked about hitmen. I started going on about his stories about how he grew up with the hitmen. And then Paul also, Paul said to me, other than the elbow, because I had asked my father, well, I asked him straight out, did you hire those people or send those people in Seattle? And my father says that he had never hired anyone in his life to have me followed. They were investigated, and Paul was right there. Paul sitting right next to me. And yeah, he did. I mean, anybody has questions about that, we can go into that. But look, Paul had me followed. He had me, you know, like I say, he told me what he had done with my bank accounts to keep track of my expenses with my parents. And my father even asked me if I wanted to work for Paul at one point, right after high school when jobs were scarce. And look, it's just a fact that, yeah, Paul had previously investigated me and had me followed, and then my father denied it. And so I turned to Paul, and Paul says, I owe your father my life, as his way of making his excuse why he didn't want to like butt into the conversation and say, hey, look, Bernie, you're lying. But why he brought up the elbow at that moment, yeah, it's important. And what is going on? And it's going to take at least an investigative psychologist to take what I'm saying right now about what the situation was in his office and what might be going on. I'm the victim here. I'm just trying to get to the bottom of this straightly based upon like the events and everything. And I could use some help with this to figure out from experts, and not the kind of experts that are going to work for their side and just make up some bullshit to protect themselves, because these guys are lawyers and they lie.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you felt your crime detective calling and could appreciate our provocative subject matter. Please take a moment and subscribe, comment, or like us on your YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, or your favorite social media. We hope you listen to our next episode. And remember, life is not always perfect, especially for the victim.